happens. He'll calm down. He's worried.
I know, but for my sake, make him go home. The last thing I need is him hovering over me.
I've already booked his flight. He'll be back here tomorrow.
Good.
Thank you. Gabby lowered the visor and looked in the mirror. The smudge of her lipstick reminded her of Hunter's unexpected kiss.
Can I ask you something?
Meg asked.
Of course.
Why now? Why Hunter Blackwell?
I told you, the offer was...
Too good to pass up, I know. But there have been many clients that have come along that had reputations 10 times better than Blackwell's.
Gabby ran a finger under her lip and paused. Alonzo had a better public reputation than Blackwell. At least with Hunter, I know he's in this for his own personal gain. He's using me with my full knowledge. There's nothing clandestine or silent about the man, and for some strange reason that comforts me.
As the words left her lips, Gabby realized how true they were. For better or worse, she knew where she stood with Hunter. He was using her, and she in turn would walk away a rich and, more importantly, free woman. It's not going to take long for word to spread. From what I've learned about Blackwell, he's one of the most eligible bachelors in this decade. There's going to be a lot of ticked-off women out there.
He's not eligible anymore.
It won't stop the gold diggers from calling. Watch your back. Gabby hadn't really thought about the women in Hunter's life. Not for a minute did she believe that he'd taken himself off the marital block to simply end the pursuit of unwanted women.
I will.
I should go. Your mother has been in the kitchen cooking since you called this morning. At this rate, I'll be gaining 10 pounds before the end of the week. What is up with her feeding her emotions?
It's an Italian thing.
Great. It's going to be a fat thing. Once you're settled in your new wifely role, you better invite your mom to visit.
I don't know about...
Do you want her chucking pasta at your new husband in front of his employees? Because she's already made threats.
The image of Hunter covered in marinara sauce made her grin.
Give us a couple of weeks. I'm booking flights. Gabby grumbled and said her goodbyes. 2 weeks to set up house and learn to be civil enough in a room with Hunter to convince her mother the man she'd married wasn't going to hurt her.
Next to his morning coffee, Andrew set a tabloid on top of the New York Times. The caption said it all. Billionaire playboy off the market. One grainy photo was of him walking into the complex that housed his current L.A. residence. The other was of Gabby on the phone, standing outside of the real estate office. The one solidifying factor to the magazine was the blown-up image of Gabby's left hand. Too bad someone didn't manage a money shot of their kiss. He'd like to see the expression on her face through a lens. Bewildered. Just as he'd been by his own reaction. He'd risked bodily injury touching her, and yet she hadn't pushed him into oncoming traffic, nor had she connected her knee with more sensitive parts of his anatomy. He wouldn't say that she kissed him back, but there was something there, something very unexpected by the both of them. The click of a tongue brought Hunter's attention around the room. Andrew held a pot of coffee and waited for Hunter to sit back so he could pour. Instead of moving away, Andrew stood over him.
Any pressing needs your valet needs to know?
Hunter sipped his coffee and smiled over his cup.
Yes, actually. We're going to be moving soon.
Andrew lifted an eyebrow and waited.
To a house. Is that right?
He took another sip and placed the tabloid aside.
I need you to change a name on the registry. What name would that be?
Gabriella Blackwell.
Long-lost family member?
Andrew asked, knowing full well there were no such entities out there.
New family member. The tabloids have it right, Andrew. I married Miss Massini last week.
Andrew blinked and uttered,
In the old movies, the butlers and maids knew everything that happened in a household, yet here I stand in the dark.
Hunter picked up his coffee and folded the paper under his arm.
You're going to like her. Sassy with a hot temper.
The image of her fighting with her brother brought a smile to his lips.
And beautiful. Beauty doesn't go far with an old man.
Hunter tapped the edge of the paper on Andrew's shoulder.
Good thing I'm not old.
Andrew's eyes followed him as he exited the room. Fish in a bowl, cells under a microscope. and Hunter as a married man had many things in common. He ignored most of the looks and peered past the distant cameras as he walked into his L.A. office. Tiffany was the only one brave enough to say anything. "The phone hasn't stopped ringing since I walked in. Should I call a news conference?"
"On Thursday."
Tiffany pulled another message from her pile. "Travis O'Reilly asked that you call him."
"Okay."
Tiffany handed him a message from her pile. "A Mrs. Massini called, said if you knew what was best for you, and I'm quoting here, you best call your mother-in-law at your earliest convenience."
There was no doubt about it. Tiffany was getting a kick out of delivering that message. "Anything else?"
"One more thing. There's a Blake Harrison sitting in your office waiting for you." Hunter's gaze moved to the closed office doors, and he handed the messages back to Tiffany.
"Hold my calls."
"And if your wife calls?" He lifted a finger in the air.
"Except hers."
Instead of a snarky remark or a look to match, Tiffany delivered something much more menacing. Approval. Without words, Tiffany returned to her desk and Hunter moved into his office.
"Your grace."
Blake Harrison wore a perfectly fitted suit, half a smile, and sleep deprivation under his eyes.
"I'll break you of that title one of these days. You can try, but I happen to like boasting my acquaintance with a duke."
They shook hands and Hunter circled his desk.
"Coffee? Your secretary already took care of that."
Instead of pretending this was a scheduled meeting, Hunter took his seat.
"To what do I owe the pleasure of your company? I'm here for Sam. She's preoccupied, or she'd be here herself."
The memory of Gabby saying something about Sam's ill sister swam in his head.
"How is your sister-in-law?" "Not well, which is why I'm here."
Hunter sat back and waited. Blake wasn't one to circle a bush, and thankfully, that hadn't changed.
"What can I help you with?"
Blake unbuttoned his jacket and sat in the chair opposite Hunter.
"I'm going to paraphrase Sam's words, but let me see if I can make this clear. I've taught Gabriella better. Go find out what the hell that man did to get her to marry him."
Blake's voice raised an octave when he repeated his wife's words. He should have seen the question coming. Instead of revealing the truth, Hunter told his old friend something they both knew as truth.
"Everyone has a price."
Blake frowned as he sucked in a tired breath.
"Not Gabby. She's been through too much to have a price. Everyone who knows her knows that."
For the first time since he'd crawled into the back of the limousine, the moment he started the blackmailing of his wife, a knot of uncertainty took a solid hold in his stomach.
"I made her an offer, Blake. She took it."
Hunter knew without a doubt Blake didn't buy his explanation.
"You know, Hunter, I'm a few years older than you. You managed to amass a fortune in less time than I, but with age, and perhaps a handful of years with a good woman, I'd like to offer you some free advice."
Hunter couldn't remember a time when another man had approached him in such a manner. He kept silent and listened.
"Karma," he began. "She's one rightful bitch. If you wiggled your way into marriage with Gabby in less than honorable terms, that shit's going to bite you in the ass. Not only does Gabby have a strong and powerful pool of friends, there's no possible way anyone who knows her is going to let her go through hell a second time."
Hunter felt an unfamiliar roll of cold sweat down his back.
"You have no idea, do you?"
Blake asked.
"I know she's a widow."
Blake offered a sad smile.
"Oh, Hunter."
He stood and stuck out his hand. The handshake was out of place, but Hunter accepted it anyway.
"Next time you merge with a new acquisition, do your homework."
That sweat was starting to cool his skin. Blake pushed away from the chair and turned to leave.
"Do yourself a favor," he said. "Ask your wife who put the bullets in her late husband."
Oh, shit.
"Are we good?"
Hunter asked, not quite sure why it mattered. Blake turned and shrugged.
"My wife takes personal responsibility for every marriage her company sets up. What's important to her is important to me. With Gabby, it's personal, not simply because she's an employee."
Blake leveled his eyes and paused.
"Don't hurt her and we'll be fine."
Hunter sucked in a deep breath while Blake left his office. Chapter 9. The mature trees thickened as they drove up into the Bel Air Estates.
We will find you the perfect home today.
At 63 years old and over 20 years of selling real estate to the wealthy, Josie Fortier spoke with conviction.
I hope you're right. The news vans in my current neighborhood are earning dirty looks from my neighbors.
Josie drove farther up the hillside and continued en route to the first of three homes they had scheduled to see that morning.
The neighbors here are much more accustomed to dealing with the press. It proves that private gates are necessary.
Gabby relented.
I suppose you're right about that.
Everything I'm showing you today is gated. Each home has a separate guest house.
While Josie spoke of bedrooms, bathrooms, and square footage, Gabby's thoughts drifted to the taste of Hunter Blackwell. The frustrating bastard that he was had jolted something she thought was dead inside her. The last thing Gabby wanted was to feel anything but anger and hatred toward her husband. Desire wasn't on the menu. Not now. Not ever. She shook the memory of his lips on hers and tried to pay attention to Josie's description of the home they were approaching. The double gates opened to reveal a tree-lined drive. The manicured landscape surrounding the drive added a sense of privacy the previous homes they looked at didn't have.
You're sitting on a smidgen over 2 acres. Lots of room between you and your neighbors. Much more appropriate for your husband's needs.
Excuse me?
Hearing Josie speak of Hunter was a strange twist. Josie parked her car in the circular drive.
When Mr. Blackwell called me yesterday, he suggested more land.
And why would he call Gabby's real estate agent? Wasn't this her decision? As the two of them exited the car, a sleek graphite gray Maserati pulled in behind them. Gabby wondered, briefly, if it was the current owner of the home. Then the now familiar frame of Hunter pushed out of the sports car, sunglasses perched on the bridge of his nose. His strong jaw and not quite perfect hair had the hair on Gabby's arms standing high. Josie offered a brilliant smile and moved to join Hunter.
Mr. Blackwell, I'm glad you could join us.
My schedule opened up, Hunter told them.
Gabby attempted to look away as Hunter shook hands with the real estate agent before narrowing the distance between the two of them. He stepped into her personal space as if he'd done so on a regular basis and leaned down to brush his lips to Gabby's cheek.
Smile, he whispered.
She did, and then chastised herself for following his demands so easily.
You didn't tell me you were coming, she said loud enough for Josie to hear.
Work became impossible once the media leaked our marriage.
You didn't tell me you were married to Hunter Blackwell,
Josie said with a laugh and a slight pat to Gabby's arm.
We were waiting to announce the union.
Josie unlocked the front door and started spouting off the home's qualities while Hunter and Gabby took several paces back. Gabby leaned close and lowered her voice.
What are you doing here?
He removed his sunglasses and tucked them inside his jacket.
Expediting our search.
Expediting? We haven't been married a week.
The sooner we move in together, the better, he whispered.
Instead of letting her hold back to grumble quietly, Hunter placed a hand to the small of her back and moved the both of them closer to their tour guide.
There are 5 bedrooms, 6 bathrooms in the main house, 2 bedrooms, 1.5 baths in the guest quarters.
They walked through a foyer that held a double staircase to the second floor. The home was sparsely furnished, indicating the owners didn't live there. White walls and marble covered most of the vertical and horizontal surfaces. They stepped into the kitchen, the same cool feeling keeping Gabby from seeing the qualities Josie was touting. The great room moved into a formal dining room, and Gabby found herself frowning.
You don't care for it,
Hunter said at her side. She shook her head.
Too cold. Too modern.
Though it wasn't modern in the hard edge and contrasting colors kind of way. Josie overheard her.
With furniture, the space will warm up.
Hunter moved farther into the dining room and glanced out the window to the yard beyond.
I don't think so.
You'll love the upstairs, Josie continued.
I don't think so, Ms. Fortier. Let's continue to the next home.
Hunter's exclamation point was accented by his purposeful strides across the room and the gentle nudge of his hand. He guided Gabby to his car and opened the passenger door.
We'll follow you, he told Josie, leaving her little option but to slide behind the wheel of her car and drive away.
That was rude, Gabby pointed out when they took the position behind Josie's car.
Why?
We could have at least looked at the upstairs.
To serve what purpose? You didn't like it.
We still could have taken the time to let Josie show us the rest of it.
I don't like wasting my time.
Gabby turned her gaze out the window. I don't remember inviting you to join us.
I'll be living in the home for a year and a half too, Gabby. I'd like to know what I'm spending my money on.
Is that right? You didn't mention the need to approve the purchase of the new home during our negotiations.
We didn't settle on an approximate price of a new home either. But that doesn't mean we can't come to a quick resolution for our temporary home.
Temporary for you, a little longer for me. He glanced over the edge of his designer sunglasses and caught her eyes.
You choosing our home doesn't mean I'm giving you a month to find it.
Josie slowed and indicated a turn into another tree-lined drive. This one had the gates a little farther inside the property line. It won't take a month.
It will if you let your agent show you crap.
They parked beside Josie and started over. Instead of letting her emotions show on her face, Gabby pasted on a smile and made comments about the next two homes they visited. The Colonial wasn't her style. The Spanish Revival didn't hit the mark. Hunter followed behind her during the tours and kept his desires to himself. She didn't lie well, Hunter decided. Her plastic smile and over-exaggerated praise for each property kept them in each house a little longer than needed. Ms. Fortier would stop at some point and ask, "So you think this is the one?" Gabby would hedge at that point with a complaint that the kitchen wasn't large enough or the outside space didn't flow with the inside. The woman was stalling, and Hunter knew it. While the two of them walked around the guest house of the fourth property, Hunter removed his cell phone and pulled up a list of homes Tiffany had sent him. He passed over several potential homes based on the things he'd heard Gabby say on their tours. Hunter sent two listings to Ms. Fortier on a text message. He noticed her remove her phone from her pocket and glance in his direction. Hunter placed a finger in front of his lips, and the real estate agent grinned. Gabby joined him outside the front of the house and shrugged. Looks like you wasted your time today after all.
The day's not over.
Josie said she had four listings to show me. This is the fourth. Gabby's smug smile made him want her to eat her words. Ms. Fortier locked the door behind her. Looks like another opportunity is just around the corner. Do you have time for one, maybe two more, Mr. Blackwell? Gabby frowned. Hunter smiled.
Of course.
Silence filled his car as they drove a short distance away. The ornate iron gates were set alongside 10-foot hedges and 100-year-old trees. Interlocking pavers funneled them up a slight incline until the pavement spilled into a circular drive with a fountain in the center. Gabby's tiny gasp had him watching her from behind his sunglasses. He took a hunch and ran with it. Gabby's Italian heritage and years of living on her brother's resort island told him a few things about his wife. Like with the other homes, Hunter stood back and observed. Gabby ran her hand along the dark wood of the double front doors. The arched entry sat along a deep porch that looked to wrap around the entire house. One singular curving stairway sat at the far end of the large foyer. Dark wood and warm gold and tan walls looked like the cracking plaster in Rome, but was a complete finish Hunter knew took at least 10 layers to complete. Whoa. Gabby seemed to forget to hold her emotions aside as she gawked at the 30-foot ceiling. Unlike the other homes, this one had furnishings staged to sell the house. Perfectly matched sofas filled the huge living room. Oversized candles sat on the hearth of a fireplace a small child could stand up in. Ms. Fortier read from her phone and talked about the home's qualities. But from where Hunter stood, Gabby wasn't listening. She walked through the living room and into the kitchen. Oh my. She walked over to the professional stove and ran her delicate fingers over a faucet. Do you know what this is? She asked him.
I don't cook.
It's a pot filler for pasta. She opened the side-by-side Sub-Zero refrigerator. The light went on, displaying a case of bottled water, further evidence that the home wasn't occupied. Through the eat-in kitchen sat a dining room, a butler's pantry,
and an open formal dining room. Several sets of double doors opened into a loggia that expanded the living space to twice the size of the inside space. Gabby walked through the doors and muttered something about the fireplace and furnishings. By the time they were upstairs and into the master bedroom, Hunter knew she'd found the right house. Like a child in a candy store, she giggled when she saw the size of the tub and shower. Iron accents and rustic colors were obviously Gabby's personal taste. The upstairs balcony looked down on the yard, the pool, the massive space below. When they moved back downstairs, Ms. Fortier opened doors and poked around the spaces they'd yet to explore.
"You like it?" Hunter said close to her ear.
It's too much." He grinned and turned when Ms. Fortier called them over. "You have to see this." Gabby had a spring in her step as they followed the real estate agent down a narrow stairway. The brick walls were darker than any of the other spaces, but suited the home perfectly. "What Italian home is complete without a wine cellar?" Ms. Fortier said. They stopped at the bottom of the stairway, and Gabby lost her smile before stumbling back. Hunter reached out and held her elbow. She was cold. Stone cold.
"Gabby?"
She shivered and closed her eyes. "I'm okay." No, she wasn't. Hunter looked around the beautiful space, saw bottles of wine, empty racks for more.
"Let's get you back upstairs."
The fact that she didn't pull away when he wrapped his arm around her waist and guided her back upstairs told him the wine cellar had sparked some kind of bad memory. She was silent as he sat her on the nearest sofa and asked that Ms. Fortier find her a glass of water.
"Give us a minute,"
Hunter told the real estate agent, once she returned with the water. Ms. Fortier stepped outside, leaving them alone. He sat on the wooden coffee table and waited for Gabby to stop trembling before he spoke.
"Are you okay now?"
She sipped the water, her hands still shaking. "Yeah." Gabby laid the back of her hand to her forehead. "I didn't expect that."
"The wine cellar?"
"No, my reaction to it."
He hadn't expected it either.
"I guess we can mark this house off our list."
She offered a quick shake of her head. "No, the house is lovely. Perfect, really."
"You nearly passed out a minute ago by walking into a basement."
She attempted a smile, and Hunter felt her squeeze his hand. It was then he noticed that he held hers. Gabby must have realized it, too, and pulled away.
"It's one room in a big house. I don't have to go into it."
He leaned forward, elbows on his knees, and asked,
"Why the strong reaction, Gabby?"
Her gaze met his. Her forced smile faded.
"It's not important."
Which translated meant, "None of your business." Hunter took the water from her hand, set it aside. He had a year and a half to discover her secrets. Something told him it wouldn't take that long. Gabby swayed when she stood, reached out to steady herself on his arm, then promptly let go.
"Thank you," she said, "for not prying."
"I want to," he told her.
"I know."
Ms. Fortier walked into the room, concern on her face.
"Shall we move on?"
Gabby looked around the room. Her eyes fell on him.
"What are they asking for this house?"
There was shock in Ms. Fortier's voice when she spoke. 18.4. Gabby's head snapped toward the other woman.
"Million?"
"Yes."
"Didn't I say less than 10?
"It doesn't matter."
Hunter stepped between them.
"Write up an offer."
"Hunter,"
Gabby called behind him.
"The house is perfect. You said yourself. I'll bolt the cellar door. What do you think about the furnishings?"
He shifted the conversation as if the purchase of the home was a foregone conclusion. Gabby closed the space between them and tugged on his arm to get his attention.
"You're being impulsive."
"I'm being practical. Buying furniture takes time."
"I'm not talking about the furniture. I'm talking about the house. $18.4 million is...
"My standard of living," he said, his gaze firm. "Just like we agreed upon."
Gabby glanced between Ms. Fortier and Hunter.
"Fine."
"Wonderful," Ms. Fortier said.
Gabby leaned close. "I was trying to save you some money."
"If I wanted to save money, I wouldn't have gotten married."
"I want to pick out my own furniture."
Hunter met her eyes.
added a slow smile.
Fine.
Chapter 10. It's not possible to come and go without an audience, Gabby voiced her complaint to Gwen over tea. Escrow won't close for 2 weeks, if everything goes as Hunter planned. Gabby held the curtain back and found a media camera swinging her way. Many of the news vans had grown bored and moved on, but a few of the entertainment television and magazine reporters settled in for the long haul. Gwen lifted her regal chin and sipped. You can always move in with him now. She let the curtain drop, cutting out the images of reporters and cameras. No, I want mutual ground. Moving in with him would give him the upper hand. How do you see that? Gabby shrugged. I just do. Moving into a home neither of us has occupied feels safer, at least in her head. Gwen's easy smile waned. You don't feel safe with him? I don't know him. It's that simple. She carefully set her tea aside. Yet you married him. You have to know that none of us believe you did so willingly. None of us? Gabby knew the intervention was coming. She'd received daily calls from every Alliance team member and a few previous brides who were close personal friends of Sam and Blake. We can start with your brother and Meg. I'm aware of how Val feels. He's being the protective brother. It's more than that. Michael called Karen and asked if the rumors were true. Michael was the side of Hollywood royalty and a former husband that Alliance had arranged. He and Meg had been visiting Val's resort when everything went to hell with Alonzo. Gwen kept talking. Then there is Neil and Rick. The two of them have had their knickers in a knot ever since you announced the contract. Gabby unfolded from the chair and stood. She hated the wobble in her legs and did her best to steady herself. I don't think I have to tell you that your husband is suspicious by nature, and Rick is probably following Judy's lead on this. I know she and Meg have been talking. Gwen followed her into the kitchen and leaned against the counter. You can call it suspicion, but I will call it deductive reasoning. Since you've lived in California, you haven't so much as gone to a nightclub or dinner without the company of a woman. Gabby opened her mouth to argue, and Gwen stopped her. If I'm not mistaken, the only charity event you attempted to attend alone was the one where pictures of you and Hunter emerged. Correct me if I'm wrong. I've not been a recluse. Close. Dangerously close, and you know it. Marriage, even the arranged kind with a prenuptial contract, doesn't make sense, Gabriella. You have friends. People who can help if you'd trust us. Gabby couldn't take the worry on Gwen's face. Facing the sink, she proceeded to wash the cup in her hand. The emotional part of her wanted to confide in the other woman, but the smart and thinking part? That section of her decided now was not the time to discuss a billionaire's blackmail. Without looking at Gwen, she attempted to stretch the truth. He's an attractive man, which wasn't a lie. While his proposal and financial offer were unorthodox, I must admit having a man at my mercy wasn't an awful position to be in. What are you saying? Hunter Blackwell is therapy? Perhaps. She rinsed the cup and set it on a towel to dry before turning. I realize the path I set since Alonzo hasn't been healthy. Hunter offered me an opportunity to break the cycle. He will be a safe companion for a few months, and then we can go our separate ways and perhaps I'll be able to find trust in men again. Gwen moved beside her, set her cup inside the sink. I want to believe you. Gabby met the other woman's gaze. Then do. A knock on the door interrupted the moment. A floral delivery van sat in the driveway. The media cameras were poised and ready. Gabby opened the door to the face of a bewildered teen. Mrs. Blackwell? That was going to take some time to get used to. Yes? He handed her what looked like a dozen roses. Velvet red.
Can you sign here?
She did. Let me get a tip.
It's all taken care of. Have a nice day.
How lovely, Gwen said behind her. Gabby set the flowers next to those Hunter had sent her earlier in the week. Each bouquet was different, from tropical ensembles to lilies. The roses were a new direction. The card held simple instructions.
Formal dress, 7 tonight, HB. Gwen glanced over her shoulder. The flowers are a nice touch. For the cameras, I'm sure. Gwen gathered her purse and kissed Gabby's cheek. It appears you have a date with your husband. Does that sound as strange to your ears as it does mine? Gwen laughed and placed a hand on her arm. Do be careful. I am. And please, if the masses begin to talk, remind everyone that I thought I loved a man who nearly killed me, and I managed to survive. Hunter needed a wife, and I'm filling a role. There are no emotions involved, and no one is trying to end my life. If you truly believe that, then do me a favor, Gwen said. Try and enjoy yourself. Her hand reached up and patted the side of her face. The lines of worry etch across your beautiful eyes, making it very difficult to believe you're not scared out of your mind. Gabby brought both hands to her face, forced the muscles under her fingertips to relax. The sooner your temporary husband knows your past, the easier it will be for him to set you at ease. Without the knowledge, he's bound to stumble upon a panic button and leave you running. The image of the wine cellar was proof of that. But confiding in Hunter wasn't an option. She'd have to tiptoe through the minefield Alonzo had left in his wake. She'd done a good job for nearly a year and a half. What was another 18 months? Charles had to double-park the limo outside of her Tarzana home. Gabby felt her pulse rise when the driver walked her to the car. The media swarmed. Mrs. Blackwell, a moment of your time?
Is it true you're pregnant with Hunter Blackwell's child?
The questions kept coming. She answered none of them as she slid into the back seat. Hunter wasn't inside, which surprised her. It didn't take long for Charles to pull away, or long for the media to jump in their cars and follow. A year and a half of this, she mumbled to herself. On the other hand, the stretch limo wasn't an awful way of traveling. It beat the sweaty palms and worry she was going to run into someone while driving Hunter's James Bond car. She should probably tell him she wasn't proficient behind the wheel. She supposed the conversation would come up when he saw the tiny dent in the bumper. A dent she managed while avoiding a cameraman and hitting the neighbor's garbage can, which again wasn't really her fault. If the paparazzo wasn't there, it wouldn't have happened. Gabby found the button that lowered the glass between her and the driver. Are they still following us? She asked, unable to tell with the darkened windows in the back.
Afraid so, Mrs. Blackwell.
She looked out the back window and saw several sets of lights. Are we picking Hunter up? Charles maneuvered the large car around the corner and onto the freeway.
He asked that I deliver you to his residence.
She glanced at the fitted full-length gown complete with spaghetti straps that held the dress in place, and high heels that would be better off walking into a concert hall than a penthouse suite. Then again, she'd never seen Hunter's home, the home she refused outright. She sat back to enjoy the drive and realized she'd be alone with Hunter once they arrived on Melrose. And if escrow closed in 2 weeks as planned, they'd be alone together often. Her nerves began a slow dance down her spine and to the tips of her fingers where she tapped them against the seat.
Would you care for music, Mrs. Blackwell?
Yes. No, I... This wasn't a good sign. Tell me, Charles, how is it you always seem to be available to be my driver? She met the man's eyes through the rearview mirror. His pleasant, unthreatening smile helped.
Mr. Blackwell requested my service, said he wanted to know who was driving his wife around.
Oh, she wasn't sure what to make of that.
He said that trusting your drivers was important to the both of you. I really appreciate your endorsement.
She was about to tell him that she hadn't gone out of her way to endorse him, but realized that wouldn't come out right. Did he say anything else?
Just asked me to watch out for you.
Spy?
Oh, no, nothing like that. More like, he knows you're a beautiful woman and are married to one of the richest men in the States. You never know who might lurk, you know?
That didn't sit well. Her face must have shown her concern. Charles instantly jumped to put her at ease.
Before I took this job, I trained in firearms and hand-to-hand self-defense. You're safe with me, Mrs. Blackwell.
His conviction made up for his size. She really needed to get over her paranoia. Maybe it was time to see her counselor again. It had been 6 months, and she'd not felt the need.
but since she said I do, that need seeped back in.
6 blocks and 4 red lights from the complex Hunter lived in, Charles used his hands-free phone and called ahead.
2 minutes, he said.
If Gabby was worried about the paparazzi getting too close, she needn't have. Not only was Hunter standing at the curb when Charles pulled in, but beside him were 2 men twice his size, their hands loose at their sides, while they all but dared the media to shove in too close. Hunter opened the door and extended a hand. He wore a tux, crisp black, clean white shirt, and a tie that was a little askew. His hair was mussed a little in the front as if he'd run a nervous hand in it prior to her arrival. Gabby placed 1 leg out of the limo and felt his eyes find her bare skin under the slit of her dress. She placed her hand in his and let him lift her from the low car. When she stood her full height, nearly meeting his gray eyes in her 4-inch heels, she realized he hadn't let her hand go. Instead, he lifted it to his lips and kissed her knuckles. Flashes exploded around them. Of course, the media was close enough to grab pictures, but not close enough to touch.
You're stunning, he said under his breath.
With a tug, she removed her hand from his and placed it on his tie. Once it sat perfectly, she smiled.
Mr. Blackwell, 1 picture.
Some of us have to make a living,
another voice called. Gabby noticed Charles move behind them and waved his hands in the air as if to remind the media to keep a distance.
I have kids to feed, Mrs. Blackwell. Help a guy out?
Hunter started to pull her away and she held firm. The need to feed the kids was probably a line, but Gabby didn't think there would be any harm in smiling for a few shots. Hunter nodded toward the building and Gabby pulled his hand closer. A ghost of a smile met his lips and did a dangerous twist to her gut. Understanding of her desires had him moving close and placing a hand around her waist. That dangerous twist did a double flip. Instead of thinking about it, she turned toward the man with kids and a huge lens and smiled. Hunter turned her toward the media on the other side of the bodyguards and tugged her closer still. She felt the full length of the man, from shoulder to hip, and for the first time in more months than she could remember, she didn't shiver. Even though the night was cool and she hadn't bothered placing a wrap over her shoulders, she was warm. His lips moved close to her ear.
I hear the hungry kid thing once a week.
Kids get hungry every day.
He laughed, putting her at ease, and walked her out of the media lights. One of the bodyguards stayed in the lobby while the other rode up the elevator with them.
Do you mind telling me what we're doing tonight? Seems to me playing dress-up for an evening at home is a little overkill.
Gabby kept her eyes on the double doors, counting the floors as the elevator made a rapid climb to the top.
A small reception, mainly business associates and a few key media personalities to spread the word.
She glanced at him briefly, realized he was staring.
You could have said as much.
You don't like surprises?
Not particularly.
He glanced at the rising numbers.
I'll remember that.
The bell dinged.
Ready?
Like she had a choice. She placed her arm through his and plastered on a smile as the doors opened.
Small reception? Perhaps Hunter didn't understand the definition of the word small. Women dressed to the nines, men in tuxes. It looked like a wedding reception, only she wasn't wearing white. Would she have, had she known? No, the gold sequins was close enough. Besides, the man was made of gold, and there would be those who called her a gold digger, so why not run with it? 2 things hit her at once. She knew no one in the room. Not 1 soul outside of Hunter. And roses. The same red velvet roses he'd sent earlier in the day sat in every possible horizontal space in the room. It wasn't a splash of color, it was a tsunami of fragrance and texture. Hunter twisted away and returned with 1 single stem.
For you.
He was too good-looking, too full of testosterone, too much. She glanced at the flowers again and couldn't help but smile like a fool. Who knew you had a pink side? His laugh caught the attention of everyone within earshot.
Only you would dare say such a thing.
She'd say more than that if they didn't have an audience. A pianist's music filled the space as they walked into the room, his arm around her. An older man approached instantly, as did a waiter with a tray of drinks.
Mrs. Blackwell, Can I take your purse?
She glanced at Hunter, who nodded.
This is Andrew, Gabby. He works for us personally. You'll get to know him very well.
He had a soft, reassuring smile.
You can trust him,
Hunter whispered in her ear.
The pleasure is mine,
Andrew said with a slight dip to his head. She handed him her purse and he walked away. Hunter removed two glasses of champagne from the tray and handed her one. A strange panic washed over her. She tried to push it aside but couldn't. Instead of saying a thing, she handed him her glass and took his. Her world settled as he sent her a puzzled look. She knew he had 1,000 questions from that simple move. But as luck had it, there wasn't time to ask or explain.
Blackwell, is this her?
Frank Adams. I'd like you to meet my lovely bride, Gabriella Blackwell.
Gabby found her hand pulled into the meaty one of Frank Adams. His accent was pure Texas, his flirty wink comical in the room full of sophistication. He wore a tux and a Stetson. It made her smile.
My Melissa is going to be terribly disappointed, Frank said with a lift of the eyebrow. Then again, I assume there will be plenty of crying women when they hear you're all snatched up, Blackwell.
Gabby stood back and watched as Hunter engaged in a conversation with the outlandish Texan before moving away. She leaned in. I can't tell if that was friendly or not. His lips nearly brushed her ear when he spoke.
I already told you I have no friends.
Gabby made a sweep of the room with her eyes. Then who are all these people?
Colleagues, enemies, acquaintances.
From the far side of the room, she saw Andrew standing to the side, watching them. And Andrew?
Well.
So there was someone Hunter deemed a friend. She didn't have time to think on that before Hunter introduced her to the next group.
They work in my New York office,
Hunter offered as they walked away. Gabby calculated the names into memory, moved to the next. There were employees, partners in different professions. All of them eyed her with a mix of speculation and envy. Well, from the women, in any event.
And you remember Tiffany?
Of course, Gabby said, smiling into the weary eyes of Hunter's personal secretary. Maybe now that Mr. Blackwell has a wife, you can make sure his suits are pressed and the flowers are ordered. Hunter shot his secretary a look that made Gabby cringe. Or not, Tiffany said before moving away. Hunter took the untouched champagne from Gabby's hand and set it on a nearby tray.
Senator Fillmore, I'd like you to meet my wife, Gabriella.
A face she recognized. We've met, she managed, as she extended her hand.
We have?
The senator said. Yes, last year. I was a guest of Carter and Eliza Billings at the Hollywood fundraiser. Carter was the former governor of California and was taking a political break for a couple of years while he and his wife adjusted to parenthood. Truth was, Carter was destined for bigger things than the governor's seat, and everyone knew it. Eliza, well, she and Sam were the best of friends.
How is it I don't remember you?
There were over 1,000 people at the event, Gabby reminded him. The silver-haired senator shook his head.
I won't forget a second time.
Hunter didn't give her time to linger and move them to another set of guests. After 12 more introductions, Gabby was ready for a break. She leaned close and whispered, Restroom?
Down the hall, double doors to the master suite.
For the first time in over an hour and a half, she left Hunter's side. The noise of the room started to fade as she made her way to the private, off-limits side of the home. She pushed through the closed doors and leaned against them, absorbing the quiet. The lights turned on with her movement in the room. Soft light filled the wall behind the massive king-size bed. A dark gray coverlet draped over the mattress and the simple artwork of New York and Los Angeles skylines in black and white were the only pieces on the wall. The drapes hadn't been drawn, giving the room a slight chill. Drawn to the sight, Gabby moved to the floor-to-ceiling windows to soak in the view. So this is where Hunter Blackwell sleeps. She knew he had a residence in New York as well, one with a view most likely more magical than the one in front of her now. She wondered, briefly, if she'd ever see it. The cityscape had its place. The single world, one without a family, a life, a pet. Yet even as those thoughts filled her head, she realized that she'd been living in a suburban home without any of those things, and no view to speak of. She'd always wanted a puppy as a child and never had one. After her father had passed, she'd stopped asking. Then again, she was a young teen and Val had taken over as man of the house. Her mother wouldn't stand for an animal, and then Gabby simply forgot about it. The image of the house she and Hunter were purchasing surfaced. Maybe she could have a dog after all. An animal to depend on her. Something to come home to. The gray slate floors and marble counter of the ensuite bathroom were masculine, but not deprived of texture. A simple flowering orchid sat in the center of two sinks. A shaver plugged into an outlet by one of the sinks. Without realizing she did so, Gabby opened a drawer. Saw the usual suspects inside. Toothbrush, mouthwash, things of that nature. The next drawer housed an open box of condoms. She had a strong desire to count them, then decided against it. Instead of lingering in Hunter's space, she moved through the room and glanced at his bed once. Well, maybe twice. The presence on the other side of the double doors made her catch her breath. Andrew!
Sorry to startle you. Just wanted to ensure your privacy.
The man stood back, giving her all the space she needed. Lord, she could use a drink. Can you show me the kitchen, Andrew?
It's a bit hectic in there right now.
She thought of the massive caterers that were serving drinks and hors d'oeuvres. I'd like to think I'm not a guest.
Of course.
Andrew pivoted, and Gabby followed. The kitchen was as sleek and modern as the rest of the home. A cook's kitchen put to work with an event such as this. I think they're fine. Murray wouldn't have sent them if they weren't servable. There was one woman and one man in solid white. The chefs. And an obvious power struggle. In Gabby's experience, one too many chefs in the kitchen always created problems. Unlike her brother's island, the employees in this atmosphere weren't ones she needed to concern herself with for the long run. The click of her heels sounded on the hard surface of the marble floors as she made her way to the trays of shrimp the two chefs argued over. The servers noticed her first, then the two in white. What is the problem? Gabby asked. No problem. The guests are out. Gabby cut the woman off. Her dyed blonde hair was pulled back in such a severe fashion, she would never need Botox. I'm not a guest. Gabby moved to the tray in question and lifted one shrimp to her nose, touched the surface of the shellfish, and promptly turned to an open trash receptacle and emptied the tray. The blonde gasped. The servers halted their movements. Did any of that go out? The second chef snapped his fingers and called out to a server, in Spanish, to retrieve the waiter who had just left the kitchen. Those were perfectly fine, the blonde managed. Is that so? Gabby lifted a nearby tray and waved it under the blonde's nose. Dig in. The woman held her ground, didn't reach for the food. You can leave. Gabby dismissed her with a flick of the wrist. Excuse me? Leave. Get into your car and leave. Gabby turned to the second chef. How much of the order did the shrimp account for?
An eighth.
Gabby looked at the other trays, made a deduction. Half the portion of skewers to keep the trays full. She found the eyes of a nearby waiter. Tell the beverage servers to keep the glasses of the guests filled. Gabby turned to the remaining chef. I assume the alcohol quota is twice what was called for?
Yes, he managed with a swallow.
I'm in charge here. The blonde, who hadn't left, said in protest. The one paying the bill is in charge. Thank you for your service, but your insight on bad seafood is astounding. And I don't mean that in a good way. Please don't make me call security. With an exasperated breath, the woman turned on her heel and left. Without thought, Gabby moved to the refrigerator and found a bottle of champagne chilling. She removed a towel from the counter and proceeded to pop the cork. Boxes of flute glasses sat alongside one of the counters. She removed two and filled them. She handed one to the remaining chef. What's your name?
Hector.
He wiped his hands on his apron and took the sparkling wine. You're doing a superb job, Hector. Gabby winked and lifted the wine to her lips. It was savory, wonderful, untainted. She drained the glass and poured a second before leaving the kitchen. Andrew fell in step behind her as she walked back into Hunter Blackwell's world. Chapter 11. His hand came down full force,
The laptop bounced, as did the fully loaded Glock 40 sitting beside it.
What do you mean my money isn't touchable?
I'm sorry, Senor Diaz. The passwords have changed and locked us out. I have a second man working on it.
Diaz tapped his finger on the grip of his gun, seriously considered shooting the messenger. He hated the scrawny cokehead standing in front of him, but Raul knew his way around computers better than any of his other men.
Who changed the password?
That I don't know. Only you and I have access to the account.
Diaz circled the trigger of his weapon, his eyes bored into Raul. He lifted the gun and Raul had the good sense to back up, hands in the air.
I didn't do it. Why would I come to you if I did?
Raul would have scurried away in the dead of night if he'd compromised any of Diaz's money. But watching the man fry a few brain cells as he attempted to talk his way out of death was worth the entertainment.
Picano's dead. If you want to avoid his fate, you'll have an answer for me in 24 hours.
But...
Diaz pulled the lever back and loaded the chamber.
24 hours. I'll have an answer in 24 hours.
Diaz waved the gun, dismissing the mule. The thick Colombian heat had sweat rolling down Diaz's back. He lifted his drink to his lips, finished it. He dragged the computer close, clicked onto a different account, this one much farther away. When the computer generated warning, denied access, misspelled password flashed, he locked his teeth together and slowly tried again. Access denied. Without thought, Diaz unloaded a round into the computer. The server, who had been en route with a replenishing drink, screamed, dropped the tray, and stood in paralyzed fear. Diaz pushed back, the chair falling behind him.
Clean this up, he hollered,
before moving into the comfort of his air-conditioned refuge, deep in the Colombian jungle. Hunter's wife emerged from the door of his kitchen with a lift to her lips. O'Reilly stopped her, and the two of them engaged in a conversation. When she tilted the champagne to her mouth, Hunter realized it was the first time he'd actually seen her drink something other than coffee, tea, or water. The memory of her switching his wine with hers when they first entered the room made him question why. Did she have a problem with drinking? In his experience, those who didn't drink at their age weren't able to handle it. O'Reilly said something that made her laugh, and an unexpected snap of jealousy hit him. Hunter excused himself and wove his way to Gabby's side. Is that right? He heard Gabby say to O'Reilly.
Is what right?
Hunter slid a proprietary hand across the dipping back of Gabby's gown and let it rest on her hip. She attempted to place room between them, but Hunter kept his fingers firm, not letting her go. Travis was just telling me that your absence in the New York office has your employees jumping whenever they see you.
Well, Travis,
he emphasized the other man's name, pissed that Gabby was using it.
I haven't noticed you jumping. I jump. I just hide it better than most.
Travis knew that flirting with Hunter's wife would result in more than a hop in the air. He'd be jumping into an unemployment line if he wasn't careful.
I'll be sure and watch for that, Mr. O'Reilly.
Travis lifted a brow. His smile waned. Hunter leaned close to Gabby's ear.
I'd like to address the crowd for a toast.
If you'll excuse us, Travis, Gabby said as Hunter pulled her away. That was abrupt, she said, so only he could hear.
Flirting with an employee isn't wise.
She laughed. Talking and flirting are worlds apart, Hunter. Gabby passed a waiter and motioned him over. Mr. Blackwell is proposing a toast. Have the champagne available for the guests.
Yes, Mrs. Blackwell.
Hunter guided her to where the pianist played and watched Gabby motion the performer to pull the piece to a close. Sitting back, Hunter noticed the servers, all of them, exchanged their food trays for those filled with sparkling wine. Though he hadn't researched Gabby's ability to be the perfect hostess, she obviously understood her way around a social event. A waiter stopped before them, and instead of picking a flute for his wife, he offered her first choice. She lifted two, handed him one. His guests slowly stopped talking and turned their attention toward them. It didn't take long for the low muttering of the crowd to dim, and the attention of his guests fell on him. When Gabby edged back to give Hunter the spotlight, he reached out to keep her close. She smiled and looked over the room.
Thank you all for coming on such short notice, Hunter began.
After meeting my beautiful bride, I'm sure you can understand my need to keep her away from just about everyone in the room, so I could encourage her to say yes. A low level of laughter, and probably more secret nods than he'd prefer, commenced.
I hope you embrace her as you have me.
He turned, made a point of capturing her eyes for his next words.
To Gabriella Blackwell, who has taken on the challenge of making me a better man.
A wicked smile met her lips. I don't believe those words were in our vows. Those who heard her laughed.
To Gabby.
He lifted his glass, set it against hers, and drank. She was still smiling when he took her glass from her hand and set them both on the baby grand. Someone in the room graciously started a ring of their glass, and within seconds there was a universal sound that every wedding reception understood. Gabby's gaze fell to the floor, but the smile on her lips held when Hunter moved into her personal space. He set his hand to the side of her face and looked into the depths of her dark gaze. He saw acceptance there instead of fear. He took that as encouragement and lowered his lips. Unlike their first kiss, on a street corner for the purpose of exposure, this one, while for exposure, was softer. Her lips parted, inviting, and God help him, he wanted to explore. She moaned when he pulled away and did the unexpected. Gabby pulled his lapel and forced a second kiss, bringing laughter to those watching. Her kiss was brief, and when she moved away, she ran a finger over his lips, removing the evidence of her presence. He caught her eyes, and for a brief moment, the space of two breaths, neither of them blinked. Something, he wasn't sure what, shifted inside her, and she lifted her lips in a soft smile that wasn't forced, wasn't fake. Hunter lost his breath, knew he grew a special shade of pale. Gabby laid her hand to his arm.
Mrs. Blackwell,
one of the servers called while the guests resumed their previous conversations. She turned, offered the waiter an ear. Yes?
A little issue? In the kitchen?
She nodded. I'll be back.
Fine.
He could use a minute alone. Time to collect his thoughts. He watched his wife, his temporary wife, he reminded himself, walk away. And in her place, Andrew stood.
I'm not sure what I expected, Andrew said in a whisper, but it wasn't her.
Hunter had disengaged, tapped out. He hadn't said a word or lent a hand to her since she'd pulled him into an unexpected kiss. The crowd in his home thinned, and eventually the only ones standing were Tiffany and a few select employees of Hunter's L.A. office. Gabby meandered around, directing the staff as they cleaned and set the room to rights. The kitchen slowly became something respective of a bachelor pad. Gabby walked out of the kitchen in time to see the last of Hunter's guests leave.
I'll be back Tuesday, he told his secretary, but out again on Wednesday.
Tiffany tipped a hand in the air, her eyes a tad glossed over from the free-flowing champagne. Gotcha covered. Hunter peered closer.
Someone driving you home?
She waved a finger in the air and said, have that covered too. She giggled, which seemed to surprise Hunter. Tiffany glanced over his shoulder and smiled at Gabby. Good luck. Then the slightly intoxicated personal secretary wobbled on a 2-inch heel and stumbled out the door. Okay, maybe slightly was an understatement. Once the door closed, Gabby called behind her. Andrew?
Yes, Mrs. Blackwell?
Can you make sure Tiffany has a ride? That she doesn't get in her own car?
I'll call the desk.
Thank you. She went ahead and slipped off her heels. It wasn't quite 11, but the night had taken a beating on her feet. With her shoes in her hand, she lifted the floor-length dress and made her way to the leather couch. She dropped the shoes by the sofa and moved to what remained of the bar. Marilyn, right? Yes, ma'am. Thank you. You were great tonight. If there was one thing being the sister of a successful restaurateur had taught her, it was to be grateful for every efficient staff member. My pleasure. Gabby took leave to pour a final glass of champagne for the evening. She'd refrained most of the night and looked forward to relaxing. From the corner of her eye, Gabby noticed Hunter removing his jacket and tugging on his bow tie. Hector and the remaining staff members emerged from the kitchen.
We're all cleaned up in there,
the chef said. Are you married? Gabby asked, feeling safe to ask with the evidence of said relationship sitting on the chef's ring finger.
I am.
Gabby turned to the remaining bottles of champagne and took one of the many dozen roses in the room and handed them both to the chef. For your wife. Thank you for ensuring our guests weren't ill.
Hector offered a full Watt smile, glanced behind her, then back.
Thank you, Mrs. Blackwell. Please call on us whenever you need a caterer.
I'll do that. Once the last staff member had left, and only Andrew and Hunter remained, Gabby collapsed into the sofa.
Miss Tiffany was escorted home. Her car is in the garage, Andrew announced. Unless you need me, I'll retire, he said.
Gabby glanced at her distant husband.
Good night, Hunter said.
Thank you, Andrew, Gabby said. With a slight tip of his head, Andrew offered a smile and left the room. Hunter moved behind his bar and poured a splash of something stronger than champagne. Without words, he stood beside the massive window overlooking L.A. The tension in his body radiated.
Are you going to tell me what I did wrong or be ticked all night?
Instead of answering, he took a long drink and continued to stare out the window.
Everyone loves you.
She lowered her glass to her lap. Wasn't that the point of tonight? Introduce me? Have your colleagues support my place in your life? He finished his drink. Not a good sign. She set her unfinished wine to the side and stood.
I'll call a car to take me home.
No.
She jumped.
We just announced you as my wife. You leaving here tonight is impossible.
The cold walls of the modern space started to close in. Hunter must have realized how he sounded and pulled back.
Good God, Gabriella. I'm not going to attack you. Sit.
The couch became a better option than hitting the floor.
I have a spare room, he told her. You